What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Can you believe what you just saw? Bobby Mack can't.
Fifth PGA Tour win of the season, I think in 10 starts. That was 17 yesterday at Caves Valley up in Baltimore, actually a little bit northwest of Baltimore in Owings Mills. What an unbelievable shot at what was an impossible hole yesterday. Steve Sands was there. He joins us right now. We're going to talk some football with Sands. He would prefer to talk about Brian Robinson Jr. being on the trade block and Terry McLaurin's contract. But, I mean, come on, man. Like, how is this being talked about among all of you guys? I mean, are we getting to the point where this is legitimately comparable to Tiger?
Man, there's some things that are certainly comparable to Tiger. The relentlessness, the pursuit of greatness, the consistency, the time after time of putting himself in this position. I mean, he didn't win the first FedEx Cup playoff event last week in Memphis, but he was a shot out of the playoff. So he was right there. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan, Kevin, of rubbing the anointing oil on an athlete just yet, but it's getting enough of a sample size right now. It's been 3.5 years since his first win. He has 18 wins, a gold medal, 4 majors, a FedEx Cup title, the only player in the history of the sport to go back-to-back at the Players. He has a chance this week in Atlanta to go back-to-back for the FedEx Cup. Nobody has ever done that before. So it's getting close to fighting off the differences between the two and starting to compare them as well.
I used to always think about Tiger that the charisma was in the game. I mean, Tiger's not like this incredibly compelling off the course. I mean, not counting all of the, you know, the transgressions, the digressions, all of the controversy, all the injuries, I'd throw that in there too. But during his moments, it was always the game that was charismatic. Scotty's not considered to be charismatic off the course either, but some people will say his game's not charismatic either. Yesterday, 17 was a memorable shot, but for those that don't pay attention and just kind of see, God, that guy Scheffler won again. Explain to everybody why Scheffler, why he's so great and what makes him so great.
Well, if you think of our sports teams and our city and think of our signature moments, Riggo's 4th-and-1, Theismann breaking up, you know, the potential interception in that Super Bowl, the Holpe save, you know, there's moments after moment of things, you know, in our lifetime with Maryland Terrapins basketball. I was talking about someone the other day about Drew Nicholson, you know, that at UNCW Nichols, game. Yeah. And there's a lot of moments in our life that we remember. I think yesterday's chip in at 17 was a signature moment. That was a signature moment for Scotty. You know, you're looking for, has he done this? Has he done this? Has he done this? Well, that's a memorable moment. We remember his wins, but do you remember any of his shots at the Masters and remember the PGA?
No, not really.
That's something is a signature moment that you'll remember, that chip in yesterday. And then the reason he is so great is, first of all, he's talented. Second of all, he works so hard. And he treats every round of golf on the PGA Tour as if it's the final day of a major championship. He has a relentless drive to win. He will crush you in chess. He will rip your heart out if you are playing him in gin or anything. He's just a competitive, competitive guy, but he does it in a congenial manner. And I think I told you this, Kevin, at the Masters. Steven Yeager, the week before the Masters, is the Valero Texas Open. 2 weeks before is the Houston stop on the PGA Tour. 2 years ago, Steven Yeager beat Scottie Scheffler with a birdie at the last hole. They played together the whole thing. So last year, this past April, I was talking to him on the practice putting green on Wednesday, and I asked him, what's it like playing with him? How intimidating is he? And Steven said, it's interesting you say that or ask that. And I said, why? He said, because he doesn't intimidate you with his personality. He doesn't have gamesmanship. He doesn't intimidate you with his presence or his prowess. What he does intimidate you with is with his greatness. Tiger was the opposite. Of course he was great, and of course he intimidated other players because of his greatness. But Tiger's real strength as far as the mental aspect was the other people, he was in their heads from the get-go. Scotty's not like that. Scotty's just flat great, and that's a kudos to him, and he does it in a nice, congenial manner, but don't mistake his congenial nature for the lack of wanting to reach inside you, Kevin, and rip your heart out right in front of you. He will destroy you at any moment, and that's a wonderful quality to have in sports.
It's also oddly maybe in conflict with what he said about a month ago. We're talking to Steve Sands,
yes,
of course, Golf Channel,
yes, it
NBC.
Does. Yes, it does.
Yeah, and we haven't had a chance because I haven't had you on since, I don't know, the PGA? No, the Open. Whenever it was, he said about the game of golf and his career, he said, quote, this is not a fulfilling life. It's fulfilling from the sense of accomplishment, but it's not fulfilling from a sense of the deepest places of your heart. There's a lot of people that make it to what they thought was going to fulfill them in life. And you get there, you get to number one in the world, and they're like, what's the point? What is the point? Scheffler asked. Why do I want to win this tournament so badly? That's something that I wrestle with on a daily basis. That was before the British Open, the Open Championship. We haven't had a chance to talk about those comments. I'm curious as to what you thought of them in the moment.
Oh, it was amazing. And if you know Scotty at all, and I've gotten to know him quite a bit over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, he's a wonderful guy. And we see Meredith, his wife. We see Bennett. I mean, this kid Bennett, all he does is go to wins. I mean, this kid's
is that
a year
true?
And a half old. I mean, Kevin, he's a year and a half old. All he does is see his father win. He's not going to remember any of it, but he's going to be in all the pictures and all the videos. And his parents are there, and his sisters are around a lot, too. And Scotty is a incredibly grounded human being. You know, you think of these professional athletes who are making tens of millions of dollars and flying all over the place privately and having this kind of lifestyle and that kind of lifestyle. Scotty is dating and married and has children and has a child now with his high school sweetheart. And they are completely intact. His mom and dad are wonderful. His sisters are wonderful. He's incredibly religious. I have no problem with people who are religious. I'm not religious. But the only issue I've ever had with people in sports who are religious are the ones who throw it out there so much,
right,
that you're like, wait
in
a second,
lecture.
Is God,
yeah,
are you telling me God was rooting for Scotty and not for Robert McIntyre? I think God, right, has more important things to do than worry about the BMW championship and, you know, that kind of thing. He doesn't even wear that on his sleeve, and everybody knows how much his faith means to him. So when he says faith, family, then golf, or family, faith, then golf, I believe him, and he's genuine about it. And it doesn't mean he's not competitive. It doesn't mean he doesn't want to win. It doesn't mean he doesn't want to be the best player in the history of the sport. What it does mean to me is that at any moment, he might just wake up and say, you know what? This isn't the pursuit I want to travel anymore, and I'm going to go a different route. I hope that doesn't happen until his,
yeah,
greatness is fully, until it's fully reached. But that's the only thing that I took away from that comment at the Open, because he was being honest. He was being genuine, which is what we all want our athletes to be. But I do think that he might wake up 4 years from now when he and Meredith say have two or three kids, or maybe they only have Bennett, whatever it is. And he goes, you know what? I'm good. I'm just gonna do my faith work, and I'm gonna do my family work, and I'm not gonna play golf anymore. So hopefully that doesn't happen. But he is a incredibly nice guy and incredibly great athlete.
Real quickly on the shot that he hit on 17 yesterday, par three. For those of you who didn't see it, he was deep and left and in the rough. And I mean, this hole was playing at an average score yesterday at 3.6. It was a par three. Where he was impossible because he had to land it probably in the only spot that he did land it to make it. But just to keep it close was going to be impossible. I mean, I it was funny because before we went to the tee shot at 18, you guys were interviewing Ricky Fowler with Cara Banks, and he almost didn't finish his answer before the tee shot. But he just said that's right. Impossible. From where he was, he's either going to run it by, into the rough on the other side, or it's going to stop 20 feet short. How did he make that?
He's just a magical player. And that's what I'm saying. When you think of the greatest athletes in sports, Kevin, they all have signature moments. You know, like I was telling someone the other day, I think Aaron Rodgers is a top five quarterback of all time. And I think he's a magnificent player, but I don't remember a single moment, you know, like a real true moment. You know, I'm not talking about a Hail Mary and stuff, but
he had some Hail Marys that are memorable. He had the long pass at Dallas to get into field goal range to win a playoff game. I remember some Hail Marys, but you're right. There's not the signature moment.
Right. So, like, I feel like Scotty kind of has gone these last 3.5 years. I'm not denigrating Aaron Rodgers. I think he's fabulous. And I do remember that pass and that catch on the left sideline against Dallas at Dallas, which was an amazing moment. But, yes. But anyway, so Scotty's building this resume. And I think yesterday, is the biggest memorable moment, I think, because of the situation and where it was and how he did it. That ball was either going to go long, rough water or short 20 feet. Like you said, there's no way that he was going to be able to nestle that within 5 or 6 feet and have a great attempt at par. And he ends up jarring it. And he hit it in the right spot, rolled in like a putt. When the greats step into the arena, things happen. And I'm not comparing him to Tiger. I'm not yet. But when Tiger would be in that situation, that's what he did. And, you know, did Rory do that from 2011 to 2014? I don't remember that. Did Spieth from 14 to 17? He had some really, really great moments, actually. Spieth did. But his sustained success kind of stopped in 17. I don't see Scotty's sustained success stopping anytime soon. It's just pure greatness. And a relentless pursuit of competing. It's amazing to watch.
23 professional wins, 4 majors, as you mentioned. He's just 29 years old. Do you have any sense as to what Tiger thinks of Scheffler?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Tiger has told me before that he thinks, you know, I think Tiger's one of these guys who is, he said this to me before, let's wait and see, because, you know, you don't want to, you know, jump on board just yet, but we are getting enough of a sample size now where you're like, wait a second. Tiger thinks the world of him, as in a work ethic sense, in a competitive sense, in a skill level sense. You know, he drives the ball beautifully, doesn't drive it majestically like Rory and like Dustin Johnson, like Greg Norman, but he drives it beautifully. His iron play is second to none. His proximity to the hole, which means giving himself opportunities at birdies, is just incredible how many opportunities he has at really good runs at birdie, which means he's able to score. And his chipping and pitching, I know the 71st hole yesterday was a great shot, but overall his chipping and pitching is top 10 in the world. And his putting was 2 seasons ago, like 186th on tour. It's now 20th. So with the ball striking matching up with the putting, even Tiger, who is as tough a critic as you can possibly be because he was the greatest player of his generation, even Tiger has said, whew, we might be looking at something really, really special here. I hope he continues on this path because he's young, he's hungry still, and he already has 4 majors. You know, if he wins 1 or 2 next year, by the way, he has a chance to win the career Grand Slam next year at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock. He's won 3 of the 4, and I don't know. Tiger thinks that he might be truly, truly special. We'll have to wait and see, but it sure seems like it right now.
All right, two more golf questions, and then we'll get your thoughts on tonight and some of the reports from over the weekend on your favorite football team. This may be a dumb question, but I was curious because I don't know the answer. Hovland yesterday makes a putt to knock out Kim from the East Lake Final. Top 30 make it to this East Lake Final. And you saw the handshake with Hovland and Kim, like Hovland sort of almost apologetic. Did they know in that moment that that putt knocked Kim out of the top 30?
Yeah, pretty much, because what happens at the PGA Tour is that there are leaderboards and scoreboards all over the place. And not only do they give you your positioning at the tournament, but during the playoffs, they give you your positioning as far as where you are in the FedEx Cup standings. Michael Kim knew exactly what he needed to do. Now, Victor may not have, and it's not as if a professional golfer is going to miss a putt.
Well, of course not. Yeah, I just didn't know if Hovland knew it or not.
Hovland definitely knew, because he knew going in what position he was in. And these guys are all astute with, you know, the numbers and how it works. And for sure, you could see it on Victor's face when he made the putt that he was almost like you said, he was almost like, man, I'm so sorry, Michael. But, you know, what does Michael expect him to make it? In fact, Michael, I'm not a social media guy, as you know, but Michael's one of these really good social media guys.
Very active.
And he immediately, did you see his tweet? Said, I thought Victor and I were friends.
Yeah.
Right. So they both knew that was a very difficult spot. By the way, you know, it happened later with Ricky Fowler. Ricky Fowler almost made it in. If Ludvig Åberg would have three putted at the 18th, he didn't. He two putted. If he would have three putted, Ricky would have gotten in. So these guys all know what's going on.
I was rooting for Ricky to get in. He did that to himself, though, at 14 and 15.
100%. I mean, everybody was rooting for Ricky. Everybody wants Ricky to play well. He's such a nice kid, popular kid. It would be great to have him back at the Tour Championship. He wasn't there last year. Was there in 23. But 14 and 15 derailed him in a big hurry.
All right. How, for those that don't pay attention, because we've had it switch and there doesn't seem to be an answer that makes everybody happy, but how, tell everybody how East Lake in the final this coming weekend will work.
I am happy to tell you it's just a straight up 4-day 72-hole stroke play event. Yeah. 30 guys are in the field. Anybody can win. The point system is gone. The staggered start is gone. Thank goodness for both of those.
Yeah.
The only issue I have now with the playoffs, the only one now, it's been 19 years, Kevin. You and I have talked about this forever. They got it right. It's 70 guys make it in, 50 guys make it to the next week, 30 guys make it to the last week. All 30 guys now have a chance to win the FedEx Cup. The only thing they need to change now is they cannot allow a player to skip an event in the playoffs and be eligible to win the FedEx Cup playoffs. If there's an injury or a family matter, that's one thing. But you cannot just withdraw from a tournament in the FedEx Cup playoffs and then go on to win. McIlroy didn't play in Memphis.
Right.
Because that's his prerogative. And this is not his fault. I'm picking on the tour, not the players. The players can do as they wish. The tour needs to get a hold of its product and say, nope, you cannot win the FedEx Cup and the big bonus and the playoffs if you skip an event unless there's an injury or there's a situation that you can't play.
With the push,
other than that, we are set to play for 30 guys this week, 72-hole stroke play, to see who wins it all. It'd be great.
Would the pushback, Steve, be that, like, this final, this upcoming weekend, doesn't represent the season-long win? You know, we're no longer in that position where, you end up, you know, starting the tournament at 10 under par or 8 under par, and you have an advantage over the players, and it is a cumulative thing. The one thing that you benefit from playing well all season in this season-long chase is that you do have the opportunity to, you know, skip Memphis or skip Caves and still be in the top 30.
Sure. I don't mind that. I understand the premise, but the playoffs are 3 weeks. It's not 4 weeks in a row. It's 3 weeks.
Right.
You got to play in all three to be eligible. And like the regular season is different than the playoffs in every other sport. Playoffs in golf is a little bit different. It's a little contrived. There's no question about it. It's a money grab. It's a TV thing. I get it.
Yeah.
I get all that, but it's different than other sports. But you know, you can't just hand a regular season winner a playoff trophy, not in any sport, especially in team sports, but certainly in golf as well. It should be separated. And they did that this year. Scotty got a huge bonus for being number one in the regular season. And now the playoffs begin and they start at scratch. And I think that's the way it should be. Look, the best team in our lifetime, our favorite football team, didn't win. We lost to the Raiders. They were better than the 91 team. The 91 team was great.
No, the 91 team was better, Steve. 91 team was better than 83.
Because they won it all?
No, because they were just better. They were a more complete team.
If the Skins, oh man, if the Skins beat the Raiders, isn't that the year they went 14-2, lost both games by one?
Yep. And in 1991, they went 14-2, and they lost, you know, a season ender against Philadelphia, in which they rested the starters in the second half. I think the 91 team, to me, is one of the greatest Super Bowl winning teams of all time.
Oh, for sure.
And it was so much more complete defensively than 83. They turn people over a lot. Plus 42, we all know, plus 42 will never be touched in terms of turnover margin. But they also got lit up. I mean, torched, including in the Super Bowl. 91 defensively, they were a wrecking crew defensively. They shut out three of their first five opponents, something like that.
All right. Well, I digress. Sorry, our dog.
No. These are the things that people would rather you and I be talking about anyway. So, I didn't know you felt that way about the 83 team. Offensively, you might make the case the best offensive team in franchise history, but 91's close.
Okay. I mean, look, I'm in love with the 91 team. I remember the 91 team like it was yesterday. It was amazing.
Yeah.
But I will say, I think that when the playoffs come, it's got to be different than the regular season. PGA Tour didn't do that for a while. Thankfully, they worked on it. And now, you know, like that. My point was, you don't just hand the Skins the Super Bowl because they were so great that year. You don't hand the Patriots a Super Bowl just because they were undefeated. In the playoffs in golf, I think it should be the same way. So they fixed that. They addressed that, which I think is the good thing. And Scheffler got the big bonus. They separated the playoffs with the regular season. But now, once the playoffs begin, you can't skip a playoff event. Again, it's not the players' fault. It's not McIlroy's fault. It's the tour's fault. They have to get together with the players and say, no, if you don't play all three, you're not eligible to win.
All right. I was going to ask you about Rory, but we can do that another time. And what's
he's
happening?
He's fine. There's nothing wrong with Rory. He just
I don't think there's anything fine, but I think people think there's something wrong with Rory. I mean,
I
he played well at the Scottish, but
fine.
That's been it.
He's fine. I promise you he's fine. Look, the guy won the career Grand Slam, okay, at the Masters, okay? That's the first thing. The second thing is it's a lifelong goal that he has had literally since he was in diapers. So, you know, for people who are not going to have a net – and you think they're not going to have a natural hangover or letdown?
Yeah.
You're out of
Fine.
Your mind. Right. And again, Tiger is a different mindset than Rory. Rory's like a normal human being who's extraordinary at what he does. And, you know, I'm not saying he's an ordinary guy. I'm saying he's an ordinary person and who does extraordinary things. You know, Tiger was a machine. You know, McIlroy's not like that. So he's naturally going to have a little bit of a letdown. That's what's interesting about Scotty. Scotty doesn't have letdowns. And it's just a difference between those two players. Magnificent player Rory is, obviously top 20 player in the history of the sport, and he's still not done yet. But he's fine. He just is in a little bit of a rut, but he loves Eastlake. He's won it three times. He's the only person who's ever won three FedEx Cups. He's going to play with Scheffler. He's going to be in that final group on Thursday, and they're going to play together again, and that'll be awesome. And I certainly think he could win. This
certainly wouldn't bet against him. You'd be crazy to do that.
No, all right. There's no way you can bet against him on that golf course.
Yeah. All right. I got 3 minutes. So where are you on the Terry situation?
I think he needs to get signed. And I think that the team has got to hold steady. And I think that Terry kind of needs to understand his worth. And what I'm afraid is that he's going to keep going with this. I guess his agent's kind of it's just a strange situation. And from what I hear, but the team needs him for sure. And Terry's not going anywhere. They're not trading him. They own his rights. They're not moving him. So McLaurin needs to realize that he is a very, very good number one, not a great number one. And he's not going to get paid as if he's a great number one, especially at this age. So hopefully they come together, get it done. What I'm afraid of, and I said this yesterday to my youngest son after the event yesterday as we were talking, because he's so worried about the McLaurin thing, is when Emmett Smith held out, and then did they go 0-2 or 0-3?
Yeah, 0-2.
And then at 0-2, and Jerry Jones had to sign him. If we don't beat the Giants on opening day, which everybody thinks is a layup, which it's not, because it's opening day and you just don't know.
Of course.
And then go on a short week to Lambeau. If we're 0-2, he's going to get overpaid if he's still holding out, like Emmett. And that's not a good thing as far as the team and the structure is concerned. But they got to get this together, Kevin. Come on, man. He's too big of a deal to the play, to the team, and too big of a deal to the fan base. And does Josh Harris really want that to be the first hiccup that they make? I hope not. But they can't overpay him. It's going to hurt the team if they overpay him. So hopefully they come together.
All right. Thanks for doing this. As always, appreciate it. And I will talk to you soon. I was just thinking, you know, before Thursday, I might reach out to you again. You're always so generous, but we didn't preview upcoming tournament. I can't wait for it this weekend, which, by the way, also coincides with some college football this weekend.
Yeah.
Real football, finally.
Phenomenal. Real football, tour championship wraps up the FedEx Cup playoffs, and then we get cranking with the NFL. It's a great time of year. But you can call
certainly wouldn't be surprised if Steve's on the air trying to check for Iowa State, K-State scores, a score from that game.
It depends if we have a wager or not, but sure.
Yeah, well,
we have been known to have an iPad on football in the booth every once in a while.
I'll talk to you later. Thanks.
All right, Kevin, be good.
Steve Sands, everybody. We'll go, I don't think, to Cincinnati, because I think Ben Baby is in town for the game tonight. Ben Baby covers the Bengals for ESPN. He'll join us next.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
If you care, Cincinnati, a four-point favorite tonight at Northwest Field in Landover. Kickoff set for 8 o'clock. Starters will play for the Bengals, and starters will play for at least a bit. Not all starters, because not all starters are healthy or are ready to go because of a holdout in Terry's case. But Cincinnati... last week in their preseason opener played their starters for a sizable amount of time compared to the rest of the league and had a 14-7 lead against Philadelphia at the end of the first quarter. They lost the game 34-27 for what it's worth. Not much. Tonight they come to Washington to play our team. Joining me right now is Ben Baby. Ben is the John Keim equivalent for ESPN. He covers the Bengals at Ben_Baby on X on Twitter. I'm assuming you're in town, although maybe you've got a later an afternoon flight. Are you here yet?
No. We actually we take it easy during the preseason. We save our time. We hang, get a little extra time at home and get ready for that regular season. So I'll be watching, tracking things through our Next Gen Stats. Otherwise, I'd love to be in the greater. I believe the DMB is what we should officially say here.
Yeah. Well, the did you say DMB or V?
DMV. I am a Dave Matthews Band fan, but it is the DMV, correct?
Okay, got you. Because remember, Bill Walton famously sort of included Baltimore and Delaware in his DMV description. Anyway, look, you know what? Preseason games, that's probably the right decision from a cost standpoint. But anyway, we won't get into the reasons that you're not here. It just preseason for me is a lot less learning for us, more for the coaches than for us. But with that said, you at least get to see your starters play. Let's go back to the decision that Zach Taylor made. Obviously, it was to switch things up with the slow regular season starts, correct?
Yeah, it was definitely something where they wanted to see if they can get that change, get better work in earlier in the morning instead of the afternoon. We'll see if it's had the intended consequence. I think when you talk to guys in that locker room, the starters do appreciate being able to get some reps, get those snaps in the preseason, knowing they're going to play a little bit. So it has seemed to be welcomed. So far, it hasn't cost the Bengals any major injuries so far. So, you know, we'll see how it looks tonight. And I think it's going to be big because I think there are a lot of questions on this offensive line that need to be answered. They did not look great against the Philly backups. So I think if you're a Bengals fan, you'd like to have a better showing than you did maybe a week ago.
Interesting, because obviously with Burrow and Higgins and Chase out there, and even Chase Brown back and back out there, they had their skill position players out there, but you said offensive line-wise, they struggled.
Yeah, I think that was a big thing. I think even, you know, you heard Zach Taylor and maybe some of the guys in the locker room say that Lucas Patrick probably would have liked to have a rep back, and that right guard battle has really been unsettled. And, anytime it lingers this deep into camp, that's generally not a good sign. You'd like that to be solidified so that that starting five can get time together, because offensive line, it's very much a group dynamic, and you know, blocking is you need all five of them to be on the same page. So can that get settled? Can they figure out what that's going to look like moving forward? I think tonight's going to be, you know, another big indicator of where that battle stands.
Yeah, something that, for those of you listening, will be interesting, just to note, as Ben said, because this is a test for Washington's defense going up against Cincinnati's starters and very, very, you know, good starting skill position players, obviously. And the question mark for our team, Ben, heading into the year is really on defense, where they struggled at times last year. So we'll see the corners matched up against Higgins and Chase and a defensive front that looks new, a little bit new anyway, against an offensive line that struggled. So where is the Trey Hendrickson situation at this point? Because it heated up over the weekend with, once again, Cincinnati perhaps seeking a trade. I'll let you kind of update everybody on where it is.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we checked with sources throughout the course of the weekend, and there hasn't really been anything new. I know there's been a lot of reports out there, but the situation has kind of stood pat from the entire time. I think the Bengals have always been interested to see what kind of trades could potentially be out there. You know, they obviously granted Hendrickson the trade request early in the offseason to say, hey, listen, if you can go find something that makes sense for both of us, let's go ahead and do it. But, you know, the Bengals, you know, have maintained that, listen, we'd like to have Trey here. We believe that there's a contract that works best for both sides. Hendrickson has also held firm on wanting guaranteed money after the first year. And the Bengals, you know, have only done that for Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow. I think there's an argument to be made. If you're Trey Hendrickson, say, listen, Ja'Marr's an all-pro player. You know, Joe is Joe. You know, I was an all-pro last year. I feel like I could probably warrant those guarantees. But when you look at Trey's age, that's kind of the big question mark. And, you know, John Kime and I wrote about that this morning for ESPN.com, kind of the situation of both him and Terry McLaurin holding in, looking for what, you know, looking for new deals. I think their age is definitely going to be a concern for both of their respective clubs. And you've got to figure out, okay, how do they fit in? And what have Terry and Trey done to get ready to, you know, if and when their situations get resolved ahead of week one?
What do you think the best offer Cincinnati's gotten since they turned him loose on seeking a trade, which was, you know, pre-draft?
Yeah, it's a good question. I have not heard anything concrete as to what. I know there's some reports out there as to what they may have received. I know that, you know, they're looking to get, you know, premium for Trey. They understand what he brings to the table. The issue is when you look at it, you know, even if you give up a first round pick for Trey, that could be an overpay for a team, because then you've got to look at the dynamics financially of what that means long term, especially if you're going to be able to get, you know, if that first round pick that you're giving up becomes a player who can give you great value throughout their rookie deal. You know, you're giving that up, and then you're also paying for Trey Hendrickson at, you know, not top of market, but definitely up there in terms of what edge rushers are currently getting paid. So that could be a steep price, and that could be the holdup. And then the Bengals, you know, if you're going to get a day two or even a early day three pick, you know, which may be more comparable for what you're looking for, you know, does that offset things? Is that too low of a price to get for Trey? I think that's what makes the whole trade situation tough. And for being honest, you know, that amount that you're, the capital that you're giving up, now the money that you would have allocated to get Trey Hendrickson done, those kind of deals are typically done much, much earlier in the offseason, before the draft even happens. So that way you can kind of get this sorted out and you can account for that moving forward. So I think there's a lot of obstacles for a potential trade to happen.
Here, many of us, or let me just speak for myself, I believe with Terry being under contract, he's going to play if he doesn't get a deal. He's under contract. He's entering his age 30 season. Wide receiver analytics, you know, post-age 31 are not favorable. He can't do himself any good unless the team completely falls apart without him in a game or two that he holds out in. I think he's going to play. What do you guys think will happen with Hendrickson, who still has a year left on his deal?
Well, Hendrickson's made it very clear that he does not intend to play on his current contract. And so I think where this is going to have to, you know, someone's going to have to budge. And, you know, the Bengals front office made this clear early in the offseason when I spoke to Bengals executive vice president Katie Blackburn at owners meetings. You know, she said that I think it's up to Trey to decide whether or not he wants to be happy. We feel like there's a number he should be happy at some point. That's going to be up to him, which was code for, listen, we're going to give him a deal whether he likes it or not. That's going to be the big question. And if you're the Bengals, I do understand maybe the hesitancy of giving guaranteed money after the first year for someone who will be turning 31 this season. And like you mentioned with the receiver metrics, they're very similar for edge rushers when you talk about their production after 30. Now, Trey is, you know, I think people around him will say, and the numbers are there to back this up, that Trey's probably a pretty young 30 for how many snaps he had early in his career in New Orleans before he got to Cincinnati and really took off. So I can see the argument from both sides there, but that's definitely the case. And you know, maybe Trey gets the total value in the contract, but maybe not the guaranteed money. That could be a way to resolve this issue. And the Bengals have been known for having good cash flow. So, you know, is he willing to take that trade off? I think that's going to be the thing that maybe can get this over the line, or maybe we see this thing continue to drag into the season.
Ben Baby covers the Bengals for ESPN. I love watching Cincinnati offensively. And last year, they were so horrific defensively. Everybody knows the story. And yet there were so many games that they actually had a chance to win offensively, both Baltimore games, even the Kansas City game to a certain degree. And that would have made all the difference in the world. No one wanted to play Cincinnati had they made the postseason and they got eliminated on the final Sunday of the year. So without Trey Hendrickson, I mean, would they have even won 9 games last year? And what would you think the prospect of a playoff season in 2025 be without him?
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
You know, it's a really fascinating question. Obviously, you know, Trey Hendrickson's one of the best edge rushers in the NFL, has, you know, put up 17.5 sacks in back-to-back years. I think his advanced analytics are even better than the sack numbers, if we're being honest. But when you look at, I think this defense, it's really going to be built around how good the secondary is going to be. I think, you know, having a good edge rusher is great, but the numbers show that if you can get a quarterback to hang onto the ball a little bit longer, that's going to make your whole front better. And I think it's going to be up to the cornerbacks and those safeties to really be better than they were last year. I think Cam Taylor-Britt is probably the most important person on that defense, this season. You know, last year, Lou Anarumo had to kind of build a scheme around Cam Taylor-Britt and not playing as well as they thought he would going into last season. And so, you know, when they ended up playing more man at the end of the year, they won 5 straight games. I don't think that was a coincidence. You're seeing a lot of confidence from this group under defensive coordinator Al Golden. And the other aspect of this is, rookie Shamar Stewart has looked incredible.
Yeah, tell us about that. I was going to ask you about that. After the holdout and all the controversy, I've been reading that he's actually looked really good.
He's looked incredible. And I wondered how well he'd be able to put this past him. There was a lot of public acrimony that you normally don't see. And it's not always easy to get over that kind of stuff and start playing. But, you know, you ask guys in the locker room, you know, veterans, you know, Pro Bowlers, guys who have been around to other places, they've all told me this kid's the real deal. It is stunning to see what he does. And they think that he's got skill sets, you know, truthfully, that are probably one of only a handful of guys in the NFL currently have. You know, Orlando Brown, you know, spoke to him for a story that ran on ESPN. He said he has a chance to be one of the best in the league and, you know, one of the top three edge rushers potentially. And I said, are you kidding? I said, that's a little strong. Like, we haven't even seen this kid play. He goes, no. The traits he has are so unique. I mean, he told me, he said, listen, he's going to beat you with speed. I know it. And yet he still does it anyways. He's a kid who has no pass rush moves and has still found a way to be disruptive against pretty good offensive, you know, pretty good offensive tackles. So I think that they are able to, you know, if they don't have Trey, I think they could get enough pressure from, you know, from Shamar, Joseph Osai, you know, came on strong at the end of last year. So that does, you know, Stewart coming on has made this a little bit more interesting. And, you know, to Trey's credit, he's been there at every practice, you know, trying since he's been, you know, returned from his holdout and has really coached up the young guys a ton. I think between every drill, he's always talking to somebody, helping them out with their pass rush moves and what have you. And I think the younger guys have appreciated that as well.
Shamar Stewart picked 17th in the first round out of Texas A&M. For those of you who are forgetting from the draft, he was certainly one of those controversial guys because the production was like, you know, a sack and a half in three straight years, despite the freakish athletic ability. Held out, there was a lot of stuff, but now is in camp and is a pass rushing defensive end. All right, last one for you. I watched the quarterback show on Netflix. Did you watch it?
I did, yes.
So I came away with, I mean, I love Joe Burrow to begin with, but I came away thinking that he was the most interesting part of that show. And I want to ask somebody who has covered his career. He came off to me as sneaky, sneaky, like high IQ. Am I right about that or not?
I think that Joe is very fascinated with things. Science and nature are things he is very, very into. I think that started to come across in the Fossil show. I've talked to him extensively about time travel, and he has done a lot of research into what it would take for that to occur. It's something he actually talked about in a radio interview before in the pre-draft process, and I brought it up to him a few years later, and he was like, oh, no, I've done a lot of the research. I think he enjoys, like, nature documentaries and all that. So that's just his inclination is in that way. And so we saw that with his Fossils talk. And I think that Joe is interesting because he has a lot of interests that are very non-football related. You know, a guy, I can talk to him about the UFC forever. You know, he really enjoys that a good amount. Obviously, I think we all know he likes Batman now, but I think he really is into the whole Christopher Nolan filmography. So, you know, I think he's got some things that make him pretty relatable to people. And I think that's what, you know, has found him, you know, people have found endearing since he's been in the league.
Well, maybe the word is more eclectic than high IQ. I don't know. Maybe he's both. I mean, I just found him to be easily the most interesting part of that show. We had already seen Kirk from the one before. Kirk is, you know, beloved by all of his teammates. I think that was a big surprise. And Jared Goff, you know, it was more about his wife than it was even him. But I enjoyed the Netflix quarterback series this summer because of Burrow, who really is great. Now, the exit, I guess, with you is this. You know, we've talked a lot here after one season of Jaden Daniels in terms of where he is on the list. I think he's easily the best quarterback in the NFC. I really believe that, and I think he is top five. But where do you put Burrow?
I think I would put him in that two. You know, you can take your dealer's choice, two through four, if you want to make an argument for Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, or Burrow behind Mahomes.
Right.
I think I would say that's pretty much where you would sit there. I think that last year he had his best year by far. I think you'd like to see him continue to have, you know, especially when you look at our total QBR, you know, have him put up the same kind of numbers last year that matched what Josh and Lamar did. I'm very curious to see what Mahomes does in Kansas City. I have a lot of questions about that offense. I feel like, you know, Mahomes, you know, quite frankly, has the potential to be the greatest quarterback of all time in terms of how he plays the game and what he does. I don't know of anybody who really can produce that at a high level. Dan Marino, maybe, from a pure passing standpoint. Yeah. Peyton Manning had that in his bag as well. Just didn't have the same championships as Brady, but that's where I would put Joe. But, you know, listen, I have said for years, I think, talking about greatest of all time, if I had to have anybody in the history of the NFL identify quarterback, I want it to be Cliff Kingsbury. He has hit on virtually everybody he's ever had ever since, you know, you go back to his time at Texas Tech. You know, he talked about, You know, Zach Taylor's talked about Cliff being a guy at Houston who found Johnny Manziel before A&M even offered him. And so I think Cliff's natural eye for quarterback evaluation is by far the best that we've seen in all of football, at the college level, pro level, what have you. So seeing Jaden's success is not shocking in the slightest.
I lied. One more. How much will Cincinnati's starters play tonight?
I think they'll probably go a quarter, give or take. Initially, it sounded like they could go for a little bit longer, but I think that we'll see them, you know, get a couple series. If they have extended drives like they did in the preseason opener, you know, they'll get probably two drives because they'll span a couple, you know, that'll span a quarter roughly. But if they have a three and out, I could see them going maybe a little bit into the second. So it'll just be a game feel, and just we'll see where Zach Taylor feels that they've got the run they need.
At Ben_baby on X on Twitter. Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. Hope you're well.
Yeah, thank you so much. Good talking to you.
Yep, Ben Baby, everybody, Cincinnati. Yeah, Joe Burrow was, if you haven't watched that, what is it, 8 episodes, 9 episodes, something like that, quarterback. You know, they did quarterback this year. They did wide receiver last year. 2 years ago, they did quarterback. Netflix does pretty much everything really well. But Burrow's an interesting guy, that is for sure. He's also a great quarterback, and we're going to get him, you know, first two drives against Philadelphia right down the field last week. He was 9 for 10, 2 drives, 2 touchdowns, and then he left the game. I think it was Jake Browning who came in, but 9 for 10, 123 yards, 2 touchdowns, a near perfect passer rating. Again, against Philadelphia's backups, primarily. What can you learn? Who knows? But Chase, 4 catches, 77 yards. Higgins didn't get targeted, I don't think, in the game. And they had Chase Brown back, a back that, you know, was really playing well before he got hurt last year, late in the season, or maybe it was middle of the season. All right, up next, Ben Standing will jump on. He was the first to say last week he had a hunch that Brian Robinson Jr. might not be on the week one roster. And sure enough, the reports over the weekend, including Ben's, he's on the trade block. He'll join us next.
All right, here's what's happening on this Monday, August 18th. Per Jordan Schultz, the Washington Commanders are listening to offers on Brian Robinson Jr. This news coming after groundswell of preseason support for 7th-round pick Jacory Bill Kroski-Merritt and veteran Jeremy McNichols. Plus, Cliff Kingsbury said prior to this weekend that he likes the running back room a lot and thinks that every guy has a place in this league. After being DFA'd by the Washington Nationals, Nathaniel Lowe is hammering out a deal with the Boston Red Sox. The 30-year-old finds a new home prior to the playoff push, and the Red Sox get an answer to their season-long questions at first base. Plus, the Nats, they fall to the Phillies by a score of 11-9. Not a great day for Mitch Parker after giving up 6 runs in just 1 2/3 innings, but the Nats were able to tie it at 6 in the third inning and got Aaron Nola off the bump. But the Phillies pull it away and close it out to knot the series at 2 games apiece. Plus, after months of trying to hammer out a deal, the Cincinnati Bengals are reportedly listening to trade calls on Trey Hendrickson, according to reports. The teams that have inquired are the Panthers, Browns, and Colts. Plus, the Commanders, they will take on the Cincinnati Bengals tonight in preseason week 2. Dan Quinn says he's excited to get the boys going and looking to get a few series out of JD5 and the starters. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman will be on the call. That'll be at 8 p.m. on ESPN. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Denton's Office throughout football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.